AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN Smart Nitrogen. Learn more about the industry's environmentally smart nitrogen at smartnitrogen.com. And by Resurge, Helena's low-dose humic granule that improves nutrient uptake and plant growth. Energize your soil and elevate your crops with Resurge. What a week. Wow, EPA is asking for more time for refiners to, well, to prove that they're following the law. And they turn back the clock to pre-2015 on who has a say over the waters of the United States. Wow. And then just this morning, the House passed the Build Back Better plan in the same week that the infrastructure bill was signed into law.
Live from El Grande Finale via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday Forever Hell. Panelists Roger Bernard, Sean Haney, and Mark Recker. Right after the news, Jennifer Shike from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. It's good to be back, man. It's good to be
super
back.
Psyched
you had fun
to have
yesterday?
You. Oh, man, we had a blast. I learned so
awesome.
Much, and I feel
good.
Like, in you know, in as is our tradition, Chip, even
yes.
in your absence,
yes.
I was able to pull the future forward.
Amen.
I talked to some dudes that are developing some things, some strategies, some ideas.
Yep.
That seemed just absolutely futuristic to me. My mind was blown.
Okay.
Blown.
So I was down at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City and for an event that they called Trade Talk. And several companies come in, make themselves available for conversations with farm broadcasters.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, it is an opportunity for farm broadcasters to get up to speed on some of the latest, greatest, here's what's coming next stuff from these companies. The other thing that we get to do is get some insight into what is really driving decisions at these companies.
Mm-hmm.
Carbon, sustainability.
Yep.
Guys, I know that is no surprise because we've talked about it so much. But to have the conversations with these people from representing the companies, right down to insurance companies that are talking about the use of precision ag and technology to prove what you are doing in the sustainability and carbon arena. It's fascinating. And I talked to a couple of new players in the carbon market, Davis.
All right.
I even asked one of them, I said, doesn't it feel like the court is getting a little full for this game? There's maybe too many players involved. And the answer was no, not at all. The demand for those carbon credits is that big. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Well, my thought was quickly, you know, I said this yesterday. We've sort of watched these bloom from sustainability, carbon credits, and all carbon capture from buzzwords to actually actionable items that farmers actually may be able to profit from. I mean, it's been amazing.
Yeah, at least if it's not profit at this point, it's at least some compensation for the efforts that they are putting forth to, geez, I hate to say farm smarter, but okay, to farm smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting relationship and that is being developed. It's as much as that as it is a market.
Yep.
So, all right, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, the Congressional Budget Office estimated the Build Back Better bill would increase the national deficit by a net $367 billion from fiscal 22 through 2031 by increasing spending by $1.64 trillion. The House bill includes universal preschool for 3- and 4-year-olds, a 1-year extension of the child tax credit, expanded Medicaid coverage, some immigration reform, sweeping new climate change provisions, including tens of billions of dollars to build out electric vehicle infrastructure, and a modest program allowing Medicare to negotiate prescription drug prices. It will also impose new taxes on corporations and wealthy Americans. Chip, that measure passed the House this morning on a vote 220 to 213 with no Republicans voting in favor. The sweeping package faces formidable hurdles in the Senate.
Yeah, they're calling it a, you know, a dead on arrival at the Senate.
Yep.
Schumer's going to be working over Sinema and Manchin over the next several days in an effort to see what he can do to get those two Democrat senators to support the bill.
Well, surging COVID cases in Europe are back on the front burner of the marketplace to close the week. Austria on Monday will become the first country in Western Europe to reimpose a full COVID lockdown. Germany warned it may follow suit as a fourth wave of infections has plunged Europe's largest economy into a national emergency, Health Minister Jens Spahn said. European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde reiterated her previous view that conditions to raise rates are very unlikely to be satisfied next year, and that the ECB would not, quote, rush into premature tightening of its monetary policy. She also predicted that inflation in the eurozone was likely to rise further until the end of 2021, labeling the situation unwelcome and painful, Chip.
Well, when it's unwelcome and painful, shouldn't you do something about it?
You would think.
You would think one thing to do is raise some rates. Go ahead.
The Biden administration Thursday released a long-awaited proposal regarding wetlands protections. The proposal partially restores the pre-2015 definition of the waters of the United States under the Clean Water Act. The Environmental Protection Agency hopes to extend renewable fuel standard compliance deadlines for 2019 and beyond, as the agency has yet to finalize 21-22 RFS volume requirements. And President Biden will undergo a routine physical at Walter Reed Medical Center today, including a colonoscopy, which will require the president to be anesthetized. While under anesthesia, Biden will transfer power temporarily to Vice President Kamala Harris. Chip.
All right. Well, good luck, President Biden, with that. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Shike, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing just fine. It has always been a goal of the industry, packing industry, doesn't matter if it's beef, pork, or chicken, get every penny you can for the carcass, right?
Absolutely. And while some of those items may not be as of much interest to us here in the U.S., just because of our cultural taste preferences, you know, there's a lot of opportunity out there around the world to be able to profit from things like pig's feet or even blood. So it's been an interesting project that the National Pork Board has been working on to kind of do a little bit of a deeper dive into how we can, you know, differentiate U.S. pork in the global export market. And one of those ways might be to find ways to capture more value from the carcass.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those where, if for no other reason, Jennifer, it's respect to the animal. It's respect to the carcass. Use it. If we're going to raise it and process that animal, let's use it.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting from their study was they were just talking about this concept of carcass balance. And so, yeah. You know, when I was in Australia, their bacon is a little different than the bacon that we eat here. You know, we eat bacon from the belly, and they're using more loin or back bacon. And so they were talking about how that's a carcass balance piece to be able to, you know, find that balance between what our preferences are and what may be different preferences and find ways to kind of even that out.
Interesting. Yeah, that is interesting. And you're right about that bacon in Australia. Jennifer, real quick, have we found a way to use the squeal yet?
Working on it.
Working
you
on
have
it.
A way?
Not yet. Let's get a research grant and go. All right. Thank you, Jennifer.
Pull it together. Come on.
That's Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. We got the free for all next.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge Granule superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeats November 23rd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerepeat.com.
She complicated, left me anew tonight. All right, we have got a lot of ground to cover on the free-for-all today. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Let's start getting them in here. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Good morning, Sean.
Hey, great to be here, Chip. Thanks a lot, man. Lots happening, huh? It's crazy.
Well, I wanted to start with you because I want to, we've got to spend some time, and we're going to do it right now up front, because of the terrible flooding that's happening in British Columbia. Give us an update. What is going on?
Well, lots of rainfall. I'm sure a lot of the audience has seen some of the videos and pictures of people rescuing their dairy cattle via jet ski or boat. It's been staggering, Chip, and there's real no, I don't think there's an estimate yet out on how many chickens and dairy animals have perished due to this flood. People have been evacuated at cities like Abbotsford. We've got a major highway, the Coquihalla, that runs to Vancouver, basically busted up in like five spots. They say it could take upwards of a year to fix. So that's bad for transport traffic. The other thing that's bad is the fact that our two major railways, CP and CN, are shut down. And I believe it's CP that has their main line shut down. So when it comes to getting goods out to port or from port, you know, to the inland, it's not a good week for that. So to put it in perspective, the Minister of Agriculture for British Columbia was on TV on Wednesday and broke into tears, Chip. Just like it is such a heartbreaking situation for all of the farmers and the citizens of that area, because they had drought and fires earlier in the year, and now they're dealing with this situation. So it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, you're going to have to forgive my ignorance on exactly, because when I think of BC, I think of the shorelines, I think of the beautiful scenery and everything. Dairy and poultry production doesn't pop to the top of the list of things that I'm thinking about in British Columbia. Just how intensive is production?
It's intense, and land prices are very expensive in that Fraser Valley area. So I believe there's like 61 dairy farms that are impacted. I'm just going off the top of my head here now. 59 dairy, 61 poultry farms that are directly really underwater. It's a good number, and you know there's going to be some issues on. Well, here's a good one for you: you could never get a milk truck in there. You could never get a milk truck out, even if you know people have been taking on dairy animals that are on higher ground to milk them. But there's nowhere for that milk to go because nobody can get to it. So it's a really tough situation, Chip.
It stinks is what it does. There's no question. That's bad. All right, stand by, Sean. Let's bring in Mark Recker, Iowa Farmer. How you doing, Mark? Hello, Mark. We're missing him right now, but we'll get him back here before too long. Let's bring in Roger Bernard. He is from IHS Market Policy Analyst there. Roger, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing well, and good to talk to you again, Chip.
You bet. Glad that you are here. By the way, Wiesmeyer is taking a little bit of time to be with some friends and family, and well-deserved time off for Jim and away from the free-for-all. He'll be back Monday morning for Signal to Noise. Okay, let's go to the news of the day while we're waiting to get Mark back here, but let's go to the news of the day, and it's big news of the day, Roger. The House has passed the Build Back Better plan.
Yes, they have. We did get the vote this morning. You know, you knew it was going to go through. You got the one lone Democrat from Maine that voted against it. No doubt he had permission to vote against it once Pelosi was sure she had the vote she needed to get it through after that record 8 hours and 33 minute speech from Kevin McCarthy, you know, last night, breaking Pelosi's own record that she previously held of 8 hours, 7 minutes. But yeah, this is just one chapter, as I know Jim has said before, and you know, this is just one chapter in the Build Back Better story. The final chapter ain't going to come for a while yet.
Right. Now, how much room is there for negotiation? You know what? I think we've got Mark back here. Let's bring him in here. Mark Recker, Iowa Farmer. Mark, are you there? Doggone. Looks like we lost him again. Well, we will get Mark on here because I've got a couple of things that we need to talk with Mark about. Just the one Democrat voted against it, Roger. And like you said,
yeah,
had permission. It's going to be interesting to see how some Democrats that voted for the bill handle the questions over the holidays from their constituents in areas that may have looked at that spending and said, listen, this feels a little unnecessary to us. It's going to have an influence on next year's elections, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think it could become one of those factors, especially if this spurs inflation more, which several economists think is going to be the case. Of course, the White House and the Democrats, no, that's not going to be the case. But a lot of other economists are saying, hey, this is going to spur some additional inflation. Republicans have already seized on inflation as something they're going to continue to hit Democrats with. And, you know, that starts to, you know, start when you get into people's pocketbooks, that's when the attention comes. And already, you know, I think, as you know, Jim has talked and Wasserman has talked, you know, odds are the Democrats are going to lose the House of Representatives. You're already seeing sitting Democrats say they're not going to run for re-election in 22 because they know once you're in the majority, it's a lot less fun to be in the minority.
That's exactly right, Roger. Good stuff there. Mark Recker, are you there, buddy?
I am, Chip. Had a little technical difficulty, new phone, so that obviously comes along with it, I guess.
You bet. I'm glad that you're here. We're glad that you're here. Thank you for joining us this morning. Just to get you up to speed, we've just talked very briefly about the Build Back Better plan that was passed. My question was about some of the Democrats are going to have to answer some tough questions when they go home to some districts that may have been less than supportive of the spending plan in the Triple B. And honestly, Mark, I'm thinking about one of our own in Representative Axne in the 3rd District of Iowa. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Well, they're going to have to sell it. They're going to have to go through point by point how that benefits their constituents and sell it. I mean, there's things in there. We don't like everything that's in there. I don't think you're going to like everything that's in any bill. And I think I talked about before, the child care issue is a big issue for a lot of parents. And, you know, that's important to people. Living out here in rural Iowa, especially, it's important. And if you want to get more people in the, if you want to get more people in the workforce, you got to give them stability at home. So that's important to address. That the universal pre-K is important to people. So there are things that are important to people. The Democrats just have to go out and sell it, because like Roger, I caught that they're probably going to get shellacked next November. So they got the infrastructure bill, the bipartisan, and this coming forward, which I think will pass eventually, and they're going to have to sell it and see where the chips fall.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Chip,
go Haney.
Well, I was going to say the part that's getting the most attention on the Build Back Better up here, of course, is this $12,500 subsidy for EV vehicles if they're built in the United States by a U.S. union. Canada and Mexico feel very strongly, and they communicated to President Biden this week that that's a violation of the USMCA that was just negotiated and approved by Congress. Obviously, their lobbying and discussions kind of went nowhere because it proceeded as was. So we'll see if that changes as this bill works its way through the Senate. And you know, it makes this Canada and Mexico sort of once again ask the question, who is the trading enemy here? Is it China or is it Canada and Mexico who are your two biggest trading partners? It's gone over like a lead balloon up here.
Roger, it feels like that relationship there and that potential problem was basically ignored when this was put in there.
Well, yeah, and what's really at the heart of it is not the full $12,000, but that $4,500 one for U.S. made, U.S. compiled, union made autos, like, you know, EVs. That's the part that I think is the real heartburn in this whole package. Yep. Yeah, the total package, you know, of the $12,000 isn't, but that $4,500 extra for you know, union made autos is definitely a heartburn point, and I think that's one that could be you know, on the block, especially, you know, with you know, not only the concerns of Mexico and Canada, but there's already talk, hey, let's head to the WTO on this bad boy by other countries, you know, which of course then that gives you a hell of a long time for
fantastic,
you know, things to happen.
That's exactly what we need.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, well, it's nice that we can pick and choose what battles we're going to fight, even with our friends north of the border and south of the border that we're supposed to be working with. Oh, we're going to go back to the start of the week. We signed that infrastructure bill. What's in it that we like? That's next.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. We've got a little bit of strength in the wheat market, but boy, it's sure quiet in corn and soybeans, Beej.
Yeah, just not moving very far from unchanged. We've traded both sides, and some of the overnight pressure that we saw late in the that overnight session tied to the COVID concerns with you know, Austria locking down next Monday, Germany may follow, those types of things. That's kind of eased here as we got to daytime trading, a little bit more of a fundamental focus. So that's probably a good thing for the grain and soy markets.
Yeah, I think you're right. It seems like some of the negative influences coming out of the equity trade too. Dow's still lower, but it's not sharply lower, that's for sure. What do you like going out of in the grain market that happened this week, Beej?
Well, obviously the technical move in soybeans above that summer downtrend, you know, that has to be a positive. And you know, meal's been the price leader to the upside, obviously, on the lysine shortage concerns and those types of things. So that's been the real news. And then the winter wheat market's leading that complex up, whereas spring wheat had been the leader recently.
Gotcha. All right, take us over to the livestock trade. What do you like there?
Well, quiet in the live cattle market here to close out the week. We got higher cash prices again this week, and we saw the big move up yesterday in the futures, kind of just pausing here to close out the week. So the fact that we aren't facing active profit taking is probably a positive sign waiting on the cattle on feed report later on this afternoon. And then the hog market just facing a little bit of price pressure, especially in the front end of the market there.
Gotcha. Have a great weekend, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
On your farm, achieving better yields is always the goal. But replacing current equipment with new isn't always an option. Bring new life and new technology to your current equipment with a John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit. It all starts at your local John Deere dealer. Schedule an inspection today to see how a customizable performance upgrade kit from John Deere can unlock the potential of your existing equipment. Search John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit to learn more.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 313-13 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Hey girl, what's
your name. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Quick heads up out there to Roger. Roger, get your list of that $82 billion in spending that's in the Triple B. I'm going to want to talk about that in just a moment. Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all going. We've got Mark Racker, farmer in Northeast Iowa, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio, and Roger Bernard, IHS Market Policy Analyst. We kind of glossed over that at the start, Roger, when we were talking about the Triple B, but there's $82 billion in ag spending in there. What does that include?
Well, there's around $27 billion in new conservation funding that includes that $5 billion program that would give farmers, $25 per acre up to 1,000 acres to plant cover crops.
Right.
There's also another $14 billion, because don't forget, of course, part of USDA's purview is the U.S. Forest Service. So there's $14 billion there to cut down on hazardous fields in the forest system, which would include of about $4 billion that could be used in other areas, but it's primarily focused on, you know, basically dealing with that extra fuel that's lying around and things like that.
Yeah, that we've let build up for the last 50 years. And now when it catches fire, it goes, man. So that's, to me, I like that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's good stuff. Now, electric co-ops, they get some dollars out of here, about $9.7 billion. To promote resiliency, reliability, affordability, and for carbon capture and storage projects. So we're starting to get, this is where some of that, climate issue starts working its way in. There's another about $3.75 billion for competitive grants that go to conservation and tree planting by state, local governments, and nonprofits. Another $2.88 billion for rural electrification loans, including some of those energy storage products. That's, going to be important, especially with solar, wind energy, and et cetera, that's, going to be aimed at for being clean sources of energy. You got to be able to store that stuff, because the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. plus another $1 billion to pay off all or part of FSA loans to economically distressed farmers and ranchers. There's several $1 billion also in there for CCC, for environmental quality, stewardship incentives, et cetera. And such sums are necessary, that infamous phrase that works its way into legislation, which means congratulations, you got a blank check, for farmers and landowners to adopt cover crop practices, et cetera, for the 2022 through 2026. Crop years.
Right. So, Mark, $25 an acre to establish and begin using cover crops. Does that provide some incentive?
That's exactly what it is, incentive. It doesn't cover the entire cost between custom application and the cost of the seed. But obviously, it's not intended to cover the entire cost.
Right.
But there's enough. I think that's a number that will generate enough interest out there for farmers to give it a try and get their feet wet, that they probably landed about right with that.
Yeah. Well, it feels to me that if you're going to talk about all in on those cover crops, that $25 roughly going to cover half.
Yeah, half or a little more than half, depending how it's applied.
Right. So, I you can't expect it to all be paid for, and here we go. Now, that also then puts you in line for some potential carbon sequestration payments from one of the many companies that is out there looking to buy your carbon credits. So it's interesting. Mark, the infrastructure bill that was signed into law at the start of the week, by the way, I had a conversation yesterday with Kevin Scott, president of the American Soybean Association yesterday, and he was in DC for the signing of that bill. And It was a look of relief on President Scott's face, Mark, on some of these issues that farmers like you have been fighting for decades, man.
So I can totally identify with what he was feeling, because, hats off to all the commodity groups and the farm groups that worked on this for so long. I myself remember 25 years ago, attending with another regular guest of yours, Tim Burrock, an Army Corps of Engineer meeting, you know, to work on locks and dams. And the work was going on long before that. So it's awesome that it passed, and it's awesome that it passed in a bipartisan manner. You got the Republicans in the Senate to come to agreement, the Democrats to come to agreement. And I think more important than that in the House, hats off to the 13 Republicans that voted for it, because without them, we wouldn't have gotten it done. And I think it's great that they signed up, voted for it to get this important legislation passed.
Yeah. You know,
and Chip, that's why I don't think that.
Real quick on this, Haney, I should not start naming names, but there's a circle of people that have had a great influence on me and my knowledge of the need for the infrastructure improvement on the locks and dams. Mark Recker is one of those. You mentioned one of them, Tim Burrock. He's probably the number one guy that has grabbed a hold of me from time and said, listen, pay attention here, Chip. This is important. Tim Recker, got to include him on that. Bob Hemesath. And I'm sure that there are more, but that right there is that kind of that circle of influencers on me. And thank you, Mark, for doing that. I appreciate that a lot. Okay, Haney.
Well, I was just going to say that those Republicans that are that voted for this, you know, good job on them. The Republicans that are basically saying that, you know, their peers there caved and are basically closet Democrats on this infrastructure bill, I think it's not going to hold up very well historically. When you look at the long-term investment that is being put into U.S. infrastructure, it's needed, and it's good to see farm groups. This is one they won.
Yep.
Well, if it didn't get linked to BBB, I think you would have had a lot different picture in the House of Representatives. Look back at how the Senate voted on it. You know, that I think might be a clearer indication of the bipartisan support that should have been there in the House, but wasn't, because, again, it all got lumped together with BBB, unfortunately.
Right. Now, the other thing here, guys, and I know that this is money to spend over either 5 years or 10 years, depending on the program. Right, Roger?
Yep.
Okay. I understand that. And Mark, I like the word that you used on it. It is an investment. There is no question about it. It's still a incredible amount of money. Incredible amount of money that we are putting forward on it. To the point that to see them all rolled into one package and just say, okay, there's whatever the total on it is. What total on it's like $1.5 trillion, Roger?
It's just a little over a trillion. The key part of it is the $550 billion in new spending.
New spending.
That gets plowed into the infrastructure efforts. That's what's really key in that whole deal.
Yeah, it's an incredible amount of money, and that's the thing that gives me pause, because it's, you know, it's money that it's not free. We can't just turn on the printing press and it's magically there. It's got to be paid for at some point. Mark, Chip, do you see what I'm saying? I'm all for the projects. It's just that, oh my gosh, it's so much money.
You will never get a better return on your investment than what we just spent on that. And I will argue, actually, that we didn't spend enough in areas, probably, but they got past what they got past. This is going to put a lot of people to work. I think I read somewhere 80% of the jobs that are going to come out of this are from people without college educations. So it's going to put a lot of people to work that, you know, need the work. You got to invest like this going forward. If we're going to stay competitive in the world with other countries that are putting money in, this is so long overdue that this dollar amount doesn't give me pause at all, because I know that return is going to come down the road.
Yeah.
And a part of the reason why it's so expensive is because this has been ignored for so long. Mm-hmm. They're playing catch up.
Yeah. I mean, how many years have we heard infrastructure, and nobody's been able to do it until we finally got stuff put aside and went with it, you know?
I can put a date on it for you. It was in the summer of 1998, Roger. You and I were together at a conference in the Ozarks. It was a pro farmer conference down in the Ozarks. And Tim Burrock went to that conference to pull me aside and say, listen, you're not paying enough attention.
Yeah.
So, it's crazy.
Yeah. When you've got 50-year-old locks and dams out there, you know, you're just asking for you know, the today's technology and today's, you know, barges, et cetera, much different than there were 50 years ago. You know, the rail system hasn't been touched for a long, long time.
Yeah, call them 80 or 90 year olds.
Well, yeah, and exactly, and the roads and bridges. I mean, you know, here even in the Quad Cities, you've got those two new bridges that are coming open over the Mississippi River. You know, a year late and $74 million over budget, but they're going to be opening up.
Yep. Very good.
You know, and those are things that make getting
it's long overdue.
All the stuff that everybody grows to the market channels, be it export or domestic.
Yeah.
You know, Chip, the important thing here, too, is going forward is making sure this money is invested efficiently and wisely and not have these projects to turn into the Big Dig or other projects that have gone way over and gotten so inefficient. The administration of this is going to be really important.
Yeah. Oversight, administration, make sure that it's going in the right direction. That's exactly right. Good stuff. And when it is the dollar amount that we're talking about, the opportunity to do it wrong is multiplied. So let's get rid of that opportunity to do it wrong and make sure that we've got the oversight in place to make sure that it's happening exactly as it should. Great point right there, Mark. I think you got me convinced that it is the investment that was necessary and needed in so many places for the infrastructure to fight for the efficiency of this country. Good stuff. All right, we'll be back to wrap up the free-for-all here in a moment.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
That's a good one to get us into the weekend. All right, welcome back to the free-for-all on AgriTalk. I'm Chip Lorre. Glad that you are with us this morning. We've got Mark Recker, Iowa Farmer. We've got Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. And from IHS Market, Policy Analyst there, Roger Bernard. Wiesmeyer's taking a little bit of time off, be with some friends and family, and he'll be back with us next week. Roger, I got to go to you for the update on what's going on with EPA. Let's start with the... With wanting to extend the compliance deadline on the RVOs, what's going on there?
Well, actually, I'm still thinking about donut earrings. But anyway, EPA has got they put out a proposal, at least unveiled it. It's still got to be put in the Federal Register to basically push back the compliance deadlines for 2020 and 2021 for everybody under the RFS and 2019 for the small refiners, to demonstrate compliance with the RFS requirements. Now, they've also put forward to a plan for in future years when they miss the deadlines that they don't have to keep going back through the regulatory process to extend out those compliance deadlines. They've set up a series of conditions that have to be met, that lay out the deadlines then that would result once they get there. You know, so it's kind of like, EPA doesn't like missing the deadlines, but they're now trying to cut down on the amount of work they got to do when they miss the deadlines, like they're going to this time around for 2021 and 22.
I'm not sure what that all means for actual compliance, Raj.
Well, it just means there's more time for it. You've got the biofuel folks don't like it because they're just basically saying, look, this just lets them keep going. Lets the opponents, the refiners, keep getting off the hook here for having to show that they're meeting the rules of the law. And when you don't have the rules of the law out there, it's kind of hard to meet them from one side.
That's like saying like, okay, I'm in a 55 mile an hour speed zone. I'm going to drive 90 for the first half of it and 20 in the second half of it. And therefore I'm averaging out and I'm in compliance. This doesn't make any sense to me, Mark. What does it to you?
I'm going to guess the police officer is just going to focus on that 90 mile an hour.
On that 90. Right.
Yes. Yes. But no, it doesn't. It kind of feels like with this EPA and the administration, they're trying to thread that needle between the refineries and the ethanol industry again. So this is giving them something. Now, they haven't given any exemptions like the old administration gave a lot of, and they haven't done that. But yet they haven't come out with the RVOs. And it's just a convoluted mess right now, it seems like, and a little bit of back and forth.
It's almost like they don't want to. It's something that they don't want to do, so they're just – they're taking steps so that they won't have to. Well, it's ridiculous. Yeah, it's law.
They don't want to tick anybody off. It's what they're trying to do. And when you do that, you don't make anybody happy. When you try to make everybody happy, you don't make anybody happy. You know, they just need to basically buckle down. Let's get this done. Let's get it over with. But it's still shown as being under review at OMB, and the way the reg system works, you know, you can't put out a reg that isn't reviewed yet and done being reviewed at the OMB, unfortunately. But hey, the bigger thing to me is how they're going to do those 2023 and beyond numbers. Yeah. That's probably even more important to me than just getting these 21 and 22 numbers out there.
Man, wreck or the reset. That's a critical thing, isn't it?
It is a big deal going forward. And we've been working on that pretty hard, you know, as corn farmers and ag groups to make sure that we are, you know, treated fairly with that and make sure that we have our place going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to take a lot of work. There's a lot of discussions that are going to take place yet on that is what it feels
like. And they're close to missing their internal deadline on this, by the way, too. They said they were going to have their proposal on 23 forward on how they're going to set things down the road coming up next month.
Yeah. Yeah. Haney, what's your take on all this? Oh, we may have lost Haney. Doggone it. So one of my takes on it, I'm going to go back to a conversation that I had last week with, earlier this week. Good grief. Earlier this week with Jordan Fife from BioUrja, when he talked about how the ethanol is just ingrained into the fuel supply now because it's an oxygenate. It's oxygenate out there on the system. It's the octane of choice. It's, in other words, the refiners are to be using the ethanol even if it wasn't in the mandate. And as from his perspective, he's scratching his head over why they continue to fight it, Mark. It just seems weird.
And they would use as low a level as possible. Like you said, they have to use some, but that's where, you know, you need to keep working to keep that blending level moving higher. And the price of gas at the station bears that out, that the blended ethanol is cheaper. And that's why it's so frustrating that we're fighting this battle over and over. And the administration doesn't want to seem to step in and solve it.
All right.
Hey, Chip.
Yeah, there's Haney.
Yeah, okay. I think if you look at the past administration and this administration, they say they're committed to ethanol, but they have a hard time proving it. And you know, that Roger said it, that fight on the 23 reset, that is going to be an epic battle, an old slobber knocker, as we should say in the wrestling business. It's going to be a battle.
Yeah, no doubt. Real quick, Roger, what did they do on the waters of the U.S.?
Well, we've now got the pre 2015, the pre Obama WOTUS definition back in place, which, as NCBA Farm Bureau point out, that's still a very onerous thing. That's what brought about the Obama-era WOTUS, and that's what brought about the Trump Navigable Waters Protection Rule. So, and interestingly enough, EPA admitted they haven't been enforcing the Navigable Waters Protection Rule anyway. They stopped doing it clear back in September. I would think that should be something that needs to be looked at because, you know, that was still the reg on the book. So we'll
exactly
see. But,
right.
Yeah, we just opened up. There's still a process that has to go through. They got those public meetings. They're going to be coming up, 10 regional ones, et cetera. So we got a ways to go before we get the final new definition.
Thank you, Roger. Appreciate your time today, buddy.
Absolutely. Always good to be here.
All right. Mark, good to talk with you again, buddy. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks, Chip. Have a great
All right. Everyone. Be safe up there, Haney. Thanks, man.
Yeah, great weekend, everybody.
All right. Come back this afternoon, 206 Central. Conversation with Darren Fry from Water Street Solutions.